can't sleep, trapped in my own mind. Anxiety. Drowning in the darkness, just can't see the light.
Depression.
Doubtful, insecure, can I really do this?
Imposter syndrome.
I'm alone, unloved, just feel invisible.
That's loneliness.
We're not therapists, but we need one.
Hello, and welcome to We're Not Therapists, But We Need One.
The podcast where we have honest and vulnerable conversations about our mental health with one another.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Anthony, and neither of us are therapists.
But we're trying to help ourselves and each other by sharing our experiences and feelings.
In this show, we'll deep dive into topics like anxiety, depression,
self-esteem, trauma, and more.
We'll talk about how they affect us,
how we cope,
and what we've learned along the way.
We're not doing this to bash or blame anyone,
especially our families, who may have contributed to our mental health challenges.
We're doing this to heal and grow,
and hopefully inspire others who can relate and open your mind to your own healing.
We also want to warn you that this show may contain some sensitive and triggering content.
We'll be talking about personal and painful things that happen to us and how they still affect us to this day.
If you're not comfortable with that, or if you feel like you need professional help,
this show may not be for you. But
if you're ready to join us on this journey of self-discovery and self-improvement, we're glad to have you.
We're not experts, but we're honest and we're not alone.
Now, let's start the timer. Anthony, how do you feel today?
I am doing pretty well today. I mean, aside from the fact that I'm sick, I'm doing all right. I took the day off work because I have just been not feeling well, and I swear to God, it hit me all at once today. And so I just was like, you know what? I think I just need a day. I need a day to rest and actually rest and not just say I'm going to rest and then do like 5 or 6 hours of work around the house and then try and rest, which did not include the housework that I did around the house, but the actual, you know, working on the renovation we're doing in the house and then doing the housework that followed that, because you have to do both while you're renovating. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm feeling better now that we've got the room back to where we can sleep in it, and I can actually sleep in my own bed instead of the guest bed, because fuck that thing. It is not nearly as nice as our bed.
Yeah.
So otherwise, I'm good. How are you, Jay?
I'm good. It's been a very chaotic just few weeks, months now. Like, so much has been going on for me that it's been a little exhausting. But I feel like this week has calmed down for the most part a little bit. I'm making it calm down. But I will say that I feel like I'm going through a sense of grieving right now.
Ooh, over the house? Or just...
But not like a bad grieving. I feel like recently so much has been changing with me and changing even mentally. Like, I feel like I've gone down a bunch of new paths recently that I'm almost grieving the old me in a sense. How do I explain it? Grieving that way back in the day, I missed out on so much, being so uptight, so wrapped up in everyone else's perception around me. And then lately it's been grieving kind of how much I was still willing to give up for other people and how I missed out on kind of finding me in a lot of senses. And so it's been a unique period of time for me. It's wild. It feels like I'm finally collecting a bunch of pieces of me that basically I broke down and have been having to try and rebuild them again, but not in a bad way.
I get that. Which I think I've been doing something very similar. Sorry about all the looks just then.
No.
Leaving. So
I was like, I figured Joe was in there. That made sense.
Well, he was asking if I would let roll his back, and I said no. And then he gave me a kiss. I didn't see him giving me the kiss because the light was weird. But I get that, because I've been in kind of the same place with that recently, I've been having an actual, factual, legitimate midlife crisis because I'm about to turn 40 next month within a little over 30 days. And I think I'm just not where I thought I would be at 40. And so there's been this whole process of me, well, processing that because I don't know where I saw myself at 40, but it wasn't exactly in this situation. And there's just so much that I feel like I still want to do. And I think there's a part of me that still believes that, like, I'm getting to an age where I can't change anything. And I know that's not true objectively, but the feelings still pop up. And I don't like that. So I've been going through a bit of a grieving process about the things that I wish I had done differently. Which, I mean, objectively, I've got great things going on. So I'm not like in a bad situation. I just think, you know, I don't know. I've done a lot of self-reflecting on my life, what I want from it, and how that looks versus where I'm at. And it's a little frustrating that change takes time.
And that's the hardest part about describing grieving to people about this scenario, because people think that you're just sad that you went through it or something. And I'm like, no, I wish you could kind of understand that it's more of a recognition, in a sense, of what could have been, but you're not proud of what you've done and where you're at in life. It's not a disappointment in who you are and who you've become. It's just there's a lot of paths I could have taken that I missed because of my strict desire to fulfill everyone else's expectations of me for so long. And I feel like, while I can't even like picture them exactly, I feel like I could have done more, but I didn't allow myself. And so it's like grieving that I was so close-minded, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, there is some sense of that not being your fault, really.
Right.
Because that's just, you know, you get raised that way. And yeah, it's really hard to break out of that mental cycle of worrying about those things and trying to fit into society, because that's what you are taught to do. And then when you get older, I feel like we're between Gen X and us, we're the first generations that are just seeing how much bullshit society sort of is. And then, of course, Gen Z is 100% there. They see it. And yeah, Gen Alpha, I'm sure, is going to be even angrier.
Yeah.
But like, it was like when you're younger and your parents tell you that you'll get more conservative as you get older. And our generation is not doing that.
That's the thing, is everyone said that. And I thought in my 20s, that's exactly what I was doing. I was like, this makes sense. And then I'm getting way more liberal as I get older.
Yeah, the more I let go of the trappings of society and what I should be doing, air quotes, the more I realize that, like, a lot of those things are just bullshit. And yeah, it's, I don't know, I'm getting to where I'm breaking out of it, but it's such a process. And you're right, you grieve the loss of something you never really had.
Well, and being gay, I grieve the life I didn't really get, because we went through a stage in our teen years discovering who we were within the restraints of our lives. And then we grew in our 20s discovering who we were without restraints. And now we're growing in our 30s, finally, to discover who we are inside, because we didn't get to do that earlier. And what kind of triggered that was, I talked to a coworker today, actually, that she's a mother, and she was talking about her daughter, and she's like studying to be a psychologist. The mother is studying to be a psychologist on the side. And we're like discussing this, and I said, I'm really kind of envious of your daughter that she has a mother that's exposing her and opening her to the world in a sense of, this is what it really is, not this is what I want you to see it as.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and I'm so, so envious that I didn't get that, that I had to figure it out on my own and that I was stunted in development in that sense.
Yep. I think parents think they're doing, because parents are just, they're just people. I mean, everybody is just like, there's no guide, there's no manual. And so people try, but I think there's a lot of misconception around trying to protect your children from the world and that being the way that you should go. And I just don't think, and I'm not a parent, so I couldn't say 100% for sure, but I'd like to believe that if I were a parent, I would do my best to expose my child, whatever, to the world in a way that lets them know what it is and what to expect in reality and not just within the confines of our house.
Yeah, not just the confines of the space that I bring them to on a regular basis.
Yeah, not just here in the house, not just what it's like at school, not just what it's like in our little social circles, but like there's just more out there that is not represented by what you find in those spaces. And my parents trying to protect me from that had the opposite effect. It fucked me up real hard.
It just makes me annoyed how ignorant I've been for so long about so much, and that like I still have to be ignorant and learn that way, which I'm glad I'm learning. I'm glad I'm open to learning. I'm glad that I've changed as a person for that. It's just so annoying that I have to start this now, and it feels daunting. It's very heavy to see how much you're missed out on and how like much you have to adjust.
It just is, and that it sucks, because I've had this conversation with my therapist where I sometimes get really frustrated with the process of undoing mental health issues, because it just feels like I'm going to be doing it forever. And
yes,
I worry that sometimes that's going to be the case, that I'm not going to get onto the other side of certain things. Like I struggle with being proactive, and I hate that I struggle with being proactive, and I don't feel like I feel lazy most of the time, but I also like I struggle with building up the will to do anything. Like even whenever I'm doing stuff that I know I should be doing, like there are times that I'm doing it just because I know I should do it.
Yeah.
And that's usually like the last resort. So they're just, I don't know, there are things that I feel like I'm going to be unwrapping my whole entire life, and I'm going to blame it all on religious trauma, but I get it. You get to where you start mourning the death of possibilities, the death of things that could have been, because you can't ever have them now because of the passage of time and aging.
I can't have my 20s back. I can't have the experiences that I missed back, because I was so caught up in showing how grown up I was and successful and responsible, because I was looking for everyone's approval.
And I feel like I spent a lot of my 20s being, I guess, feeling like I was disappointing people all the time, because I wasn't like, I just immediately felt like a disappointment directly, like out of high school, and felt like I wasn't holding up to my potential, and that made me depressed, and it made me move to inaction. And I look back on some of those times, and just like, man, you were in a really bad space, and I don't think you even knew it. So I get it.
I think another part of this mental health stuff that really drives me nuts is you kind of have a breakthrough moment, and it just feels kind of freeing. Like you like, I've reached a new level. This feels great. And you're just happy going along with it. And then another layer hits. And so you're like, what the hell? And then you kind of are going through this down episode where you're falling apart again because now you're basically peeling off this new layer that you have to work with. And so I feel like right now I'm just getting past that next layer that I've hit. Because for a while there, I was just in this really daunting phase of it. And I think it was the realization right before my breakup that I need to do more for me.
Yes.
And that sometimes I can't... How did I actually see this phrase today? I can't help a flower bloom, but I can build the resources around it to help it to an extent.
Right.
Sometimes the flower can't bloom and you can't do anymore. And that's kind of where I was just like, it was that eye-opening moment where I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, you can't sacrifice everything to try and make others work with you well. And as I say that, I'm not trashing anyone specifically.
Right. I know what you mean.
But, and so it was kind of my breakthrough moment of that layer that I've been in where I was like, yeah, I have to have more confidence and love in me. And that is something hard to recognize. It's hard to, you know, for years I've been saying to people and I've been believing you got to love yourself. And how do you love yourself is the most difficult thing to answer.
I think it starts with sort of embracing things that are positive about yourself that you have previously avoided embracing as positive aspects of yourself because you were worried that it was some kind of like pride or being haughty about it. Mm-hmm. And we get punished, especially growing up in like religious households, for taking pride in what we do because you get treated a lot like if you do the right thing or if you do something good, that it's just the expectation. Like, that's just it. You shouldn't.
And if you talk about it, it's arrogance.
It's arrogance. Exactly. And you're committing a sin, but you're also being, you know, insufferable because you're being arrogant.
Yeah.
And it causes us a lot of the time to not put stock into our abilities. And it's just so awful. It's a terrible way to raise a child. And
we begin to undervalue ourselves so much.
Yeah, 100%. And I think lately I've started to realize that I've started to embrace things that I am good at. And I have learned that one of the things that I do really well is that I learn new anything very quickly. I am a very fast learner. And so like I can almost anything that has technical aspects to it, I can pick it up and start learning it immediately and just from doing it. And so there's, you know, it's like putting in the flooring here and doing all the housework. I've never done this before, but I can watch a YouTube video. And when I start doing it, and I see what it looks like and I can see how it works and functions. That in my head immediately starts clicking things into place where I'm like, oh, okay, now I understand how to do this. I understand what I need to do here. And now I can, now I can do this efficiently.
Yeah.
And it happens really fast for me, which is great because that's something it's a really good, I don't know, trait to have, I guess. So I've been trying to embrace that a little bit more and give myself points for saying like, you are a fast learner and you are intelligent in a way that you can learn things that people are afraid to even try.
And I have been taking this method, and it's kind of inspired by my therapist, even though she never said to do it this way. Anytime I kind of like criticize myself in a lot of sense, she'll be like, would you ever do that to one of your friends? And so I started taking this concept where I'm like, what if I consider myself as a very close friend? And I start treating myself as how I would treat my friends. And how, I mean, like you, I joke around with all the time, but
shit all over me all the time.
But in general, like in general, like, that's our humor style. But in general, like, you know that
when things get real, they're real.
When we're real, I'm going to support you in every possible sense.
Right.
Regardless of what you're doing, even if I'm not sure it's the best option, my theory is I can say what I think, but you're doing what's best for you based off your life experience.
Exactly.
And I can be like, this is my concern, but you live a different life than me. Doesn't mean my concern is a reason to not do it. And so I've started kind of looking at myself. When I get a little critical, I'm like, you're not bad at that. You're just criticizing yourself. The voice in your head is somebody else. So
that's been the biggest challenge for me, is identifying those voices like that and picking them out and determining what's mine and what's not mine. And there's so many of them that are critical like that, that are just not, they're not me.
And so I'm kind of like starting to treat it as a way, when I hear those voices, where I'll start to recognize and be like, hold up. If I heard somebody talking to my friend with this way, what would I do?
Punch him in the dick.
I would step in and be like, whatever the fuck they're saying, that is a problem that they have of their own. That's not a you problem. And so it's been this kind of manipulation mentally to be like, treat yourself as somebody you're close to, not as yourself.
And that is, I think that's a really great form of self-love, where you just allow yourself that bandwidth to see yourself as the person you are, and you allow yourself to take up that space, because I've spent so much of my life trying not to take up space, feeling sorry for taking up space. And
same.
Holy shit. Like, I would never, ever expect that from anybody else. I would want to them to know that they are allowed to be where they are. They're allowed
to occupy as much space as they want, that I like them. Yeah. What triggered probably this whole train, because it's just resonated in my head ever since my very first real therapy session, I talked about jumping out of the way of the gas station at the grocery store. And she said, you're just forgetting that you're a real human that deserves to also take space. And that has just constantly resonated with me, because I was like, she's right. I don't have to jump out of the way for people. I don't have to be a rude jackass and block everything. I could be aware, but fuck, I deserve to be here too.
Yep. And I think that's where it's really doubly hard whenever you're raised in, like we were, in a Christian household, where you get, I guess, like, you get taught that you should really be acquiescing to other people, and that's the right thing to do. But then on top of that, you have to deal with your internal struggle of being gay and being taught about how bad that is. And so you're trying to hide this whole time. So you're acting the whole time to put on a show to make sure that people don't know that you're gay. And so I think it's one of those things where you're constantly trying to hide and not take up space as who you are really. And it just bleeds into adulthood, and it makes it very hard to feel valid internally.
And I'm not sure if your parents were the same as mine in this sense, but they really kind of taught you to be invisible. Go play. When we're out in public and they're talking with people, like, shush.
Yep.
And so you would just have to, like, stand back there quietly, not make any noise, not get involved. You were just basically allowed to be involved when they wanted you to be involved. Otherwise, you need to stay out of the way, or you're in trouble in some sense. Like, so they were scolding you or something. And it just, you were always trying to hide to not be in the light, but you wanted to be in the light because you wanted the love and attention.
Yeah. It's that, and then, anyway, sorry, go ahead. I had a thought, and it just escaped me immediately, so I don't remember what I was going to say.
Well, and it's funny how much that invisible, in a sense, is just so embedded in me, because in specific scenarios where I'm uncomfortable, I really just want, I want to be as invisible as possible. But I enjoy being in the group and being the funny guy that everyone enjoys being around because I really like that attention, I guess, from my friends. It's just weird, like, but I'm invisible until I reach that moment where I'm comfortable to be funny.
Yeah. And I think I do that a lot in social situations, and I've been trying a lot more lately when I get in social situations to not just default to sitting there and just looking basically at the situation that I'm in, because I struggle with it. I don't want to engage by default. I kind of want to sit there and I'm going to listen and maybe interject whenever something relevant pops up, but I still struggle with it. But I've been trying really hard to get more proactive about realizing that people want me to be there.
I just had this conversation Monday, I don't remember, with one of my friends, because I said, thank you so much for inviting me out, meeting your friends that came in from Chicago. It was a blast. Loved meeting them. They were so fun to hang out with. And he's like, I'm so glad you came. You're always the life of the party and everyone enjoys you. And I'm like, that's really nice to hear, because I wish you knew the anxiety I have in my brain when I'm meeting anyone new in a friend group, especially if they're like good friends with other friends of mine. Because I get this anxiety that I'm like, oh God, I'm not going to fit in. And when I can't catch the vibe of a friend group and have fun with them, I just feel like I should be invisible.
And I don't know how your childhood was at school, but I was definitely not a popular person.
Same.
And so I struggled with that too, where I always felt like I was being either picked on or just left out. And, you know, you're like the last person picked on the playground and all that stuff. And I was that person, or it always felt like I was. I objectively, that could not be true, but that's how I see it in memory. And so I just assume people don't want me places a lot of the time. And it makes it really hard, because like Sunday, Joe did the Pride Parade here in town, and I stayed home and I worked on the bedroom because I wanted to get it done, because I really wanted to get our bed back in there, because I'm tired. I was so tired. But afterwards, he and the men's choir, which is where he went off to just a minute ago, a couple of the friends that he has there were like, hey, we're going to go out to the bar. And he called me and was like, hey, they're going to go to the bar and I'm going to come home and pick you up and you're going to come too. And I was like, I didn't feel like it in that moment. And I was just like, no, I don't think I'm going to. But then sometimes I think it was like maybe 5 minutes later, I was like, you know, you should go. Joe wants you there. Joe really, he wants you to be there for these things. And sometimes I forget that he wants me there, and then I forget that other people are my friends. So like I get there and I see them and they're excited to see me and I'm excited to see them. And I just, it's like I forget in the interim that I am wanted places and not just tolerated.
Yeah. Like your friends are not asking you to join them as a sympathy thing. Like it's genuinely a, hey, we like you and we want to see you.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times I don't do it like I used to, but I used to very much be that guy that's like, they're only asking because they feel obligated to. And I don't really know where that transition hit, but I was like, no, they're asking because they want you to go. And
yeah,
it was kind of a nice recognition to be like, oh, okay, cool.
And I still get that in my head so often, where even like my best friend and best man at my wedding, I always feel like if like there are times that we hang out that I'm just like, is he just hanging out to like fulfill some weird obligation to like hang out with me? And I know that's not true. Like people spend their time where they want to spend their time most of the time. I mean, I know we also have to meet our obligations and stuff, but like, you know, it's. it is hard to remember sometimes that people want to be around me and they don't just tolerate me and just hang out with me so that, I don't know, so that I don't feel bad about myself, I guess. Which, not, joke's on them, I feel bad about myself anyways. yeah, it's hard. It's difficult to manage that internally and still function.
Well, and I will say this, looking at myself as a best friend situation has really even broadened this perspective more, because I've started saying, I actually would like to hang out with myself. Like, that guy would be funny. That guy also is not going to be judgy towards me. Like, I feel comfortable talking to him. And I'm like, okay, I can understand now why people want to be your friend.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I haven't gotten quite to that point with myself yet.
I'm not going to tell you that I'm perfect on it. I'm telling you it's new.
I've started catching these thoughts. But I am doing a better job of giving myself bandwidth to say that I do deserve space. And so I'm growing into the things I like a little bit more and accepting them as positives instead of like seeing myself as a imposter all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's been my last, God, my whole entire life. It's just been like, well, I don't deserve to be in these spaces. And I'm starting to give myself that leeway. And it's only taken me 40 years.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of life that slowed us down.
Yeah, but you know what? We got a lot of life ahead of us.
We have a lot of life ahead of us. Gonna take advantage of it.
Damn right.
And we're out of time.
Thank you for joining us today on our show. As you can see, therapy is not always easy, but it can be very rewarding and healing.
If you want to follow our journey and see how we progress, tune in next episode for the continuation of We're Not Therapists, But We Need One.
Join us on our socials, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, and Instagram, and email us at nopenottherapists@gmail.com.
That's nopenottherapists@gmail.com.
We would love to hear your thoughts on our journey or any questions you have that we can help answer. Until then,
stay safe.
Mental health is a serious and important issue that affects millions of people around the world.
If you or someone you know is struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, or have any other mental health conditions, you're not alone, and there is help available.
You don't have to suffer in silence or feel ashamed of your feelings.
There are many resources and support networks that can help you cope and heal.
Here are just a few.
The Crisis Text Line, which is a 24/7 service that connects you to trained crisis counselors who can help you with any type of emotional crisis. You can text HOME to 741-741 in the US or Canada, or 85258 in the UK, or 50808 in Ireland. You can also visit crisistextline.org for more information.
The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is a 24/7 service that provides free and confidential support for people in distress, as well as prevention and crisis resources. You can call them at 1-800-273-8255 or chat online at suicidepreventionlifeline.org.
The Headspace app, which is a meditation and mindfulness app that can help you reduce stress, improve your mood, and enhance your well-being. The app offers guided meditations, breathing exercises, sleep sounds, and other tools that can help you relax and cope with your emotions. You can download the app for free and try it for 10 days or subscribe for unlimited access to all features. You can find the app on the App Store or Google Play or visit headspace.com for more information.
These are just some of the resources that we have found helpful, but there are many more out there that can suit your needs or preferences. The most important thing is to reach out for help when you need it and to know that you are not alone. Mental health is not a weakness, but a strength, and taking care of it is one of the best things you can do for yourself and your loved ones. Until next time.